Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Douglas Vermeeren, and we are talking about his new book, Personal Power Mastery, the ultimate manual for honing your personal, business, and financial success proficiencies while eradicating your limitations. Have you ever fantasized about being in Napoleon Hill's shoes as he was gathering the wisdom of the world's leading industrialists for Think and Go Rich, but doing it today and getting guidance that is not only ageless, but spot on for today's world? Douglas Vermeeren has done just that. This internationally renowned speaker, leader, mentor, and filmmaker has interviewed 400 of the world's business and motivational leaders to glean the wisdom that comes from personal power mastery, the skill of leading a life of achievement and success on every level. Doug's search for success strategies took him to the offices of the founders and CEOs of such companies as Nike, Reebok, Fruit of the Loom, FedEx, American Airlines, USG Boots, Uber, KFC, McDonald's, Disney, United Airlines, and Microsoft. And as a result, ABC Television and Fox Business are referring to him as a modern-day Napoleon Hill. He is also the producer and director of 3 out of the top 10 personal development movies ever filmed, the author of 3 books in a guerrilla marketing series, and a regular series featured expert on Fox, CNN, ABC, NBC, CTV, and CBC. Currently, his program, Personal Power Mastery, is rated as number 3 in the world and for the most powerful personal development seminars. And his new book, Personal Power Mastery, will take its place on the list of international bestsellers. You can find out more by visiting his website, which is DouglasVermeeren.com, and I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Doug to the show. Good day, sir.
Hey, it's super good to be with you. Wow, actually, as you're reading that bio, I was like, who is that guy anyways? Man, when you hear exactly what you've done after a while, you forget how, you know, all these things as you're doing them, but when you look back, wow, that's pretty astounding. I want to hear this guy talk to you.
Really, that's quite impressive. Yeah, exactly. And you know, and when you're in the, you know, the day to day, making those accomplishments, you know, sometimes it's easy to not get that bigger picture. But there we are. That's, you know, we are talking to the expert. So,
thank you.
But let's start first of all. You know, the journey of interviewing 400 leaders. I mean, that is a lot.
So, and lots of fond memories there, definitely, for sure.
So, how did, you know, I mean, first of all, why 400? And then how, over what period of time did this occur?
Yeah, for sure. Well, basically, the reason we started with the number 400 was because that's approximately what Napoleon Hill did. And to be quite frank, we've actually interviewed and spent time and mentored under more than probably closer to about 600 or 700 now. But the original study that I did included about 400 of the world's top achievers. And it actually took close to about 10 years to do. So it wasn't something that I immediately did on a Saturday afternoon and quickly cataloged. It was, you know, something that we really spent a lot of effort. But here's something also to think about with that. Everybody always talks about the 400 top achievers that I interviewed, but they also don't understand that we have spent a lot of time with people that maybe didn't make the list for one reason or another. And so there were a lot of people that we spent time with that, quite frankly, our definition of success is something that they didn't quite measure up to.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, and when you think about the leaders, there's such a, it's a scale kind of thing, you know, where depending on what success, how success is measured, and I'm sure some of those that didn't make the cut for the top 400 still had, you know, their special leadership kind of tendencies and traits, yeah, so...
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because here's the deal: is that one of my friends that you guys probably know from the movie The Secret, Johnny Martini, he mentioned that our wealth appears to us in the form that we value most. And so, quite frankly, some of the people that, you know, had achieved amazing things, they were successful in certain areas of their lives, but their success didn't flow into, say, other areas of their lives. And so I think it's really important that we recognize that, you know, success, which I think is something that most of us misunderstand. Most people assume that it is a very straightforward, easy definition to determine what success looks like. And I personally believe, though, that it is not, that success appears in really five different areas in our lives. I believe that the most abundant people, of course, find success in all of these areas. But I would start by saying that the five areas are this, you know, yourself, meaning self worth, self-connection, self-confidence, your spirituality, meaning that are you balanced with the things that you ethically know to be true with what your actions and activities are, your health, in other words, how is your health in comparison to how you want it to be, and then we're talking about relationships, and not just with your spouse or significant others, but also, you know, with those in your community and your, you know, and abroad, and then lastly, abundance. And I think the problem that most people have is they really look at the abundance part, and that's the only part we measure. They say, if I've got lots of money in the bank, I'm successful. And that's not necessarily 100% true.
Yeah, you know, in those five areas, often people will devote a lot of attention to one, maybe two of those areas, and then those other three kind of slide, you know, slide down the totem pole. And I guess it would seem most beneficial to maintain a balance in attention toward each of those areas.
And I'm so glad that you pointed that out, because here's the deal: is I believe that each one of those builds upon each other. So, for example, if you don't have the self-worth and self-confidence game figured out, you're going to have a really hard time, for example, in the relationship arena, right? Like, you know, if you bring a deflated balloon to a party, you're the one everybody's looking to hang out with, right? I think that I'm starting, you know, create the wealth or...
I was kind of losing you there, Doug, for a second. I didn't get that last part.
If a person is trying to do a shortcut, for example, get the wealth fund aspect figured out, you know, they also at the speed verification, they'll do things correctly, right? So it's important that we have an important balance in each of those key areas.
Okay, yeah. So what, you know, the title of the book in your program is Personal Power Mastery. So how would you describe what that is?
Well, I think the title is really important, and we deliberately chose that. Personal power mastery really is the foundation of all success. And let's just take these words and look at them for a second here. If we look at that first word, personal, that is the foundation of all success. Until you make it personal, you cannot create success in your life. In fact, if you're looking to change the outcomes that you have, if you're looking to improve who you are or what you've got going on in your life, there's a saying that we share at the seminars, which is, if you own it, you can change it. And I think that that's a big problem with a lot of people, is they tend to pass their success or their lack of it onwards to outside circumstances or people or the marketplace or the way they were brought up or their past. And the truth of the matter is that disempowers you. That makes you a victim immediately. So if you're going to be successful, you've got to take ownership, you've got to recognize it's within your power, and you've got to make it very, very personal. If you'll do that, then you'll see that you begin to move on to the next step, which is power. And power is actually a very interesting consideration as well. In our definition of power is actually defined, in my opinion, as the ability to act. And within the book, we share a variety of powers that you need to take advantage of in order to become highly successful. These are the common denominators that we saw among the world's top achievers. But the first thing is to realize that you do actually have the power to take action. And I think that that's one thing that a lot of people, again, miss. They don't take it personal, and they don't realize they've got power. And then lastly, I think that word mastery is important because most people misunderstand. They think mastery means perfection or a high level of expertise. And what mastery actually is, it's a journey. It's really a journey. And so I'm not asking people to get things perfect, but I'm asking us to get started. And I believe that, you know, many people wait for perfection. And as I interviewed the world's top achievers, it was very evident that top achievers are not perfectionists. They're improvisers. They often will create the situations they want rather than waiting for the situation we want to arrive. And I think that that's a very important distinction. In fact, I think a lot of people in life, it's almost like they're needing to get to a certain destination, but they're waiting for a report to come back to their house that says all the lights are green along the way, so you can go. And that's not the way that life works. Nothing is ever perfect. So we start with what we can do, and from there we begin to, you know, make things better. We take personal responsibility to know that we can improve the situations and, you know, turn them to our advantage, and that's what top achievers do.
Yeah. Well, you know, the idea of taking ownership, you know, is one thing I've seen so many people kind of avoid. Outsource their circumstances to, like you say, other people or circumstances, power. You know, it's just interesting because so many people try to look at power as what many times ends up being abuse of power. You know, the idea of, if you're powerful, you know, that, you know, the powerful kind of take advantage, so to speak. So, you know, I really don't want to be like that, you know, so I'm not going to be powerful like that. But, you know, the idea of, you know, power being the, you know, ability or the knowledge of being able to take action, that's a whole different perspective on the view of power.
And you know, as you're saying that, another thought comes to my mind about power. One of the things that I like to do as one of my hobbies is I'm actually a competitive mixed martial artist, so I enjoy doing that. And there's a saying that I've heard many times repeated among my peers. It's a samurai thing. It says, when you defeat the enemy within, no enemy without can harm you. And I think that that's the beginning of power, is if we really, again, take it personally and we learn how to curb our own appetites and our own shortcomings and our own fears, and we learn not necessarily to not be afraid, because that's impossible. There's always going to be things that frighten us, but when we learn how to deal with that fear in a more productive way, then all of a sudden we start to have power. So we learn how to conquer that enemy within, which is, again, the greatest power, and then suddenly we find other powers begin to appear in our lives we didn't know we had.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad that when you spoke about mastery, that, you know, indicating that it's not necessary, it's not perfection, you know, it's kind of on a path, you know, toward getting better rather than reaching an end point of, you know, this is it, I'm master and I'm done.
Sure. In fact, it's interesting, and I wish I could always find the resource for this. I was reading a book one time where they did an interview with Pablo Picasso, the painter, and the reporter who was interviewing him for this article asked him about mastery, like how did he become such a master painter? And he actually said that in his mind, the word mastery doesn't mean that at all, that the word mastery should be better defined as perseverance or persistence.
Mm.
And I think that that's actually truth, because if you look at everything that ever comes into our life, the more that we exert effort into it, the more of a master we become. And if you ever meet someone that's at a high level of accomplishment, again, I'll use the example of martial arts because I'm very dialed into that community. When I meet people who've been practicing for years and have attained high degrees and black belts and all these things, most of them will admit that this is just a point in their life where they're starting to learn. Right? So it's, in other words, the better you get, the closer to the beginning you actually are. You realize how much you really don't know with the more that you know.
That's profound there, Doug. No,
it's true.
But it is. You know. So now, how did you come up with the concepts in the book? Was it through the interviews?
Yeah. Yes, it was. In fact, I guess the best way to kind of describe how it rolled out, I would do the interviews and I would tape record them. Boy, there's an old word we haven't heard for a while. Tape record them on the little mini cassette recorders. And then nowadays, I, of course, record them on the voice memos on my iPhone. And I would catalog some of the key elements that they would share. And naturally, I would have very specific questions about activities that these people had done in their lives. And I was listening for common themes. Now, as the themes would appear, a lot of times I would bring them back into my own life and I would attempt to do something with them. And as those activities I would attempt to do them, I'd bring back the results and I would chat again with these people. Now, the interesting thing is the word interview is maybe a bit misleading, because for many of these people, I wouldn't necessarily sit and ask questions. I would actually prefer to use the word mentorship. And some of these people, in fact, are still even friends with me decades later. And I still actually do mentorship with many of them. In fact, I've got one individual I meet with every single Friday for lunch. He's worth about $700 million. He's a major sort of real estate developer, right? So they would kind of oversee the themes and the ideas that I would gain, and then they would add their insights. I would take it away, and I would prove the concepts by doing things in my own life, which would get the results. And what's kind of interesting, if I look at the results that I actually gained, as a 19-year-old, this is kind of when I started doing this. It didn't take 10 years for me to start getting results. It took 10 years to do the interviews, but it didn't take 10 years to get results. And as a 19-year-old, in my first 6 months, having these mentors, I did $1.6 million, which is on average about $9,000 a day. So, you know, I started learning things and perspectives, ways to look at things and solve problems that I had never seen before. And that's kind of what gave the basis for what we share in the book. I began to catalog what it was that was really getting the results, not just the theory, but what are the real things that you could do that would be different than what, you know, perhaps most people would assume.
Yeah, exactly. So I mentioned in the introduction some of the companies, you know, that you were involved with for the book. Who were some of the people, you know, that you interviewed and that maybe kind of made the most impact? And now I know that singling out people sometimes is you know, not what authors like to do.
We might forget somebody important, right?
Exactly. But,
yeah,
you know, just off the top of your head for, you know, for today's discussion, you know, who are some of the people that, you know, really kind of made, you know, a big impact, you know, on your perspective and your work?
Yeah. Well, there were definitely some that made a big difference to me, and obviously some that made differences in different categories too. I think if I were to name probably my A number one, I guess most influential, who kind of shaped me the most, was a fellow by the name of Frank McGuire. And just to give you the background of Frank, Frank was at ABC when it was radio and transitioned to television. He gave Alan Alda, Charles Osgood, and Ted Koppel their first jobs. He was the philosophy teacher to Marilyn Monroe and got to know her very well. He was later the VP of all of marketing for American Airlines, later also aide in the White House for the press to Kay and also Lyndon B. Johnson. He was also the director of all of marketing for KFC and was very close friends with Colonel Sanders. He was also one of the four founders of Federal Express. So this guy had done a lot. He was very busy in his life, right? And the cool thing about Frank is that Frank actually became very much like a grandfather to me. He was actually in our home on a regular basis for Thanksgiving. I was almost his grand.
I'm losing you again there, Doug. Hello, Doug? Do I have you there?
Yes, you do.
Okay. I didn't get any of it, you know, the last couple of sentences there at all.
Okay, I apologize. Sometimes there's bad signal here. So what I was going to say is that, you know, he really took me under his wing, and it was almost like he was a grandfather to me, right? And so
a lot of the things I observed and learned from him were not even just lessons that were formalized, were things that, you know, just being with him, I was able to gain insights into. And so that was somebody really special to me that, you know, just some of the things that he shared and taught, I'll never forget. You know, it was just, it was amazing to be part of his life experience. Some of the other ones that I thought were really kind of cool to learn from that I really thought were valuable. Bill Farley, who was the former owner of Fruit of the Loom Underwear, former CEO. He also owned Anaheim Citrus Products. He also used to own the Chicago White Sox. You know, multi-billionaire, but amazing guy. And as we spent time in his home, my wife and I, we got a chance to kind of really just see some behind the scenes of how a billionaire lives, how he makes decisions. I'll never forget one time I was in his living room and we were talking about a business idea that I thought was kind of cool. I didn't necessarily think I was going to do it, but I just thought it was cool and I wanted his opinion on it. Well, interestingly enough, before he gave his opinion, he just kind of smiled and said, "That's a really interesting idea. Let's do this." And he called in immediately a handful of his own staff, had me explain the idea to them, asked them their opinions on it. They shared it. Then he considered what everybody had to say, and then he shared his opinion. I just thought, what an interesting thing that he builds his life according to a council, right? Every wow. really interesting major idea he would have a council about. And that was just such a powerful thing to see, right? So, and I mean, there were others that were also just as cool, just amazing things that they shared. I mean, we can even talk about some of the females that were in there. Marilyn Tam, who was the former CEO of Nike, Reebok, and one of the founders of the Avita Salon Group. Just a very kind, generous, giving individual who, you know, really seemed to be dialed in to what the contemporary marketplace was requesting, right? Like, just you'd mm-hmm. think that sometimes when these CEOs get to high, high levels that they sort of lose touch with reality, right? But very, very in touch, very, very in touch, right? So just powerful lessons there. And then, of course, it wasn't just business leaders that I studied. There were celebrities and athletes too, right? Like, so, I mean, we could go on for hours about some of the amazing people that there were, you know. I'm so grateful for my experiences.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, you know, I mean, what you're describing, you know, as far as, you know, these very accomplished people, that their connection, like you talked about Marilyn, you know, the connection with the pulse of what's going on, you know, it seems that, you know, when you look at some of the operations of major companies, you know, around the world, a lot of times the CEOs are very distant, you know, or they're maybe just connected to their board, you know, or directly to the shareholders, rather than to the pulse of the general populace. And it sounds like touch, being in touch with the general populace seems to be a factor.
Well, I think it's a massive necessity. In fact, one of the other ones I was just thinking of was Howard Putnam, who's the former CEO of Southwest Airlines, but also the VP of Customer Service for all of United Airlines. And one of the things that I think was really kind of interesting about that, which I thought was really quite good, that I learned from my time with him, is this idea of, you know, we can't ever, teach attitudes, but we can definitely teach skills, right? And so finding mm-hmm. people that really understood what got them excited. And now these are my words, but I saw this with all of the top CEOs. We hear a lot of times people say, well, to be successful, you've got to find your passion. You've got to find your purpose. And okay, I get that, but I think it's only part of the answer. And the reason why is I think if somebody is just focused on their own passion and purpose, they're kind of selfish, right? And selfish mm-hmm. people never really expand beyond themselves. And so as I observe these top achievers, maybe a good way to say it is what Warren Buffett said once. Warren said, what you love about you is your hobby. What others love about you is your business. And so what these top achievers look to do is they found a way to have their passion and their purpose overlap the passion and purpose of those that they serve. So in other words, it's not just about you. You want to find what is going to be your biggest area of success? Find out what you love. Find out what you're good at. Find out what your mission is. Now find people you can serve that have the same love, the same passion, the same purpose. And where those overlap is where you're going to find the easiest way for you to create success.
Yeah, that sounds great. Now, in some of those cases, some of the people you spoke about, their experience and success is crossed areas of general, you know, topics. I mean, they're very diverse in their interests, in, like, you know, owning a sports team, you know, running a retail business. I mean, some of them seem to not be boxed in by a particular industry. Did you find that those who were, you know, cross-industry leaders within their organization, did you find that they had a particular interest, or maybe that there was an underlying theme in their businesses?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I don't know that there's a general answer because everyone was so different, and including their personality types. Like, there were some entrepreneurs that I interviewed and people that I met that were extremely focused, and it was very difficult for anything to wedge its way into their life aside from what their focus was. And I honor that. I think focus is a big, big key to creating success. But then I also found that there were some that had, like me, what I call ADD-HD, which is ADD in high definition, right? Like every 10 minutes, people like this and myself have new ideas, new opportunities, et cetera. And so I think maybe to kind of answer your question, I think one of the biggest things that those business leaders needed to do is recognize who they were in terms of, are you the uber-focused person? And maybe then you need some help to take care of the things that get left behind because you're so focused on that one thing. Or maybe you're the ADD person that you need somebody to come behind you and clean up and organize the mess of great ideas that you've got, but you aren't the guy to implement them, right? Like, it's just not going to be you. And so I think we really need to understand where our strengths come and where, you know, we really shine in that respect. And if we can kind of figure that out, I think that's where we gain an advantage. And, you know, I mean, for me personally, I've had to come up with strategies. Like I said, I've got ADD. It's funny, Harvard said that the average person has a number of 6 ideas a year that could create a $1 million enterprise. Well, some of my friends I know have that in just a morning, right? Like, it's just, there's just so much going on, right? And so I think if you can find these strategies to really focus on your strengths, let me maybe frame it this way, because here's another important way to look at it. You know, a lot of the gurus that are out there say you need to step out of your comfort zone to be successful. I'm going to say that's not true. I'm going to say you need to step into your brilliance zone, and that's where you should get uncomfortable. There's lots of things in my life I'm not comfortable with. For example, I will never, ever do my own dental work. I'm just not comfortable with that, right? But stepping out of my comfort zone to do that doesn't make sense, right? Like, why would I do that? And so you want to find the things you're brilliant at and then become uncomfortable in those areas. In fact, one of my favorite interviews that I did as we're talking about these was Edward James Olmos. You know, the actor? He was Commander Adama on the latest Battlestar Galactica. He was in Miami Vice. He was in Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. He's been in everything, right? Just an amazing man. And by the way, I really honor him for his work that he does in the literacy programs with kids. Just amazing stuff. But I was sitting with him for lunch, and I said, what's your definition of success? And he thought about that for a minute. Then he came up with what I think is one of the most amazing answers I've ever heard. He said, some people say that success is doing the things you don't like. He says, that's not success. He says, success is finding something you love and then doing it, even when it's hard. And I think that that's the challenge, right? Most of us have a really hard time staying focused long term or finding a way to do what we love because sometimes it gets kind of hard. So if we can master that, I think we can really rise to high levels.
Absolutely. Well, Doug, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take just a quick break. And then when we come back, I want to ask you if you had any aha moments as you were writing this book.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay?
Oh, yeah.
or just a few. So, okay.
Yeah, no. Thank you.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello. This is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide. books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And again, just a reminder, we have added to our distribution the TuneIn platform as well as iHeartRadio, so you'll be able to listen to the podcast on both of those. Again, today, my very special guest is Douglas Vermeeren, and we're talking about his new book, Personal Power Mastery, The Ultimate Manual for Honing Your Personal, Business, and Financial Success Proficiencies While Eradicating Your Limitations. And again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is douglasvermeeren.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back. Doug?
Hey, cool. Good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Great. Great, thanks. So, aha. Was there an aha moment
aha.
or two?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. My goodness sakes. I think there's really two big ones that I want to kind of share. The first one came to me in a very peculiar way. See, when I did the interviews with the top achievers, I also wanted to include some other interviews alongside it. So this is what I'm talking about when I say we did 400 of the world's top achievers, but we've been really interviewing people since, right? There's always new top achievers to learn from. But there's also a certain group in our society that I wanted to learn from. And that was what I called change makers. In other words, people who help facilitate change quickly. And if you think about it, that's really what all of us want, right? Like, you know, whatever tendencies that we have or habits that we have or patterns that are in our life, all of us would like to improve those, right? We'd all like to have better patterns and habits because it's those things that actually dictate our results, let's be honest, right? And so I wanted to find out who is it that can help me understand why humans change quickly and how they change quickly and this idea behind change. Well, as I was doing these interviews, I came up with an idea to actually interview somebody who trained the operators for the suicide hotlines. And I thought, wow, if anybody needs to help somebody make a change in a hurry, those are the frontline guys, right? And by the way, if anyone who is one of those operators is listening right now, again, my hat goes off to you. You have such a noble service that you're giving to the world. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But these are people that are receiving calls. And in some cases, I was informed that, you know, people calling in even have a gun in their hand. They're ready to hurt themselves. They are at the point of despair, discouragement. All things are incorrect and wrong in their lives, they feel. Everything is hurting. It's a big point of tragedy and chaos in their lives. And now you get them on the line and you've got to convince them to come down from that. Wow. Right? So this was a big aha for me. As I asked this lady who trains these operators a little bit about the training, she said to me, you know what, out of all the things that we can tell someone who wants to harm themselves, the only thing that we cannot say is don't kill yourself. And I was like, what? That's like the first thing I would say, don't kill yourself, right? Because we're not allowed to say that. And I said, well, what do you mean? Help me understand. What's going on here? And she says, well, here's the deal. When somebody calls in, and they're experiencing that kind of turmoil or stress in their life, the reason they're wanting to take their life is because they feel they don't have any choice. They feel like they have no options. They feel like that is the only solution. And so therefore, you know, when we tell them don't kill themselves, we're actually reinforcing this idea is I'm going to tell you what to do. You don't have a choice. And so she said, instead of telling them don't kill themselves, we simply present it this way, that you do have the choice. You could kill yourself, but this is what the consequence may look like. But you also have the choice that you could not kill yourself, and this is what the consequence looks like. Or, again, you could get help. That's a choice, and that's what you're doing now.
And that's what the consequence looks like. And she shared that the moment that we start helping people see the power of the choices they have, and that they have more choices, the more choices that they recognize, the more power comes back into our lives. Now, the interesting thing is over the last several decades, we've taught this now personal power mastery. We've seen people come in who've had their homes foreclosed on, people that have gone through bankruptcies, people that are losing their jobs, people that are going through divorce, terminal illness, they've lost loved ones, whatever it is. And most of them feel like their choices become limited, and so therefore they become paralyzed because they don't see what choices still exist. And so by helping them see the choices, we've been able to really give them their power back. Now, by the way, I might mention one of my definitions of success is the same as the definition of happiness. Now, you'll probably hear that most people say, yeah, happiness is a choice. Well, okay, that's part of the equation. My definition includes consequence. So in other words, if you want to be happy, happiness by definition in my books is that you have peace with the choices and the consequences that follow those choices. That's happiness. Now, that was the first big aha. Would you like to hear about the second?
Yes, absolutely.
The second is maybe even a bit crazier. Here's the deal is, you know, all over the world, we see people teaching goal setting and achievement. In fact, pick up any success book, and that's one of the first things that they share in there is this idea of to set goals and write it down, set a date, make a checklist, if you will, and all these kinds of things, right? You even see them use that the phraseology, the SMART goal setting system. Specific, measurable, achievable, etc. You've seen this all, right? Well, here's the big aha, folks. Out of all the top achievers that I interviewed, I don't think I saw that system practiced once. It doesn't exist. Okay, people don't use it. And that's maybe why the majority of people who set goals the old-fashioned way that we've been taught, they never get there. They set these New Year's resolutions, they write it down, they make a list, blah, 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 they never get there. Now, here's the way that they do it. And by the way, before I share maybe that, I share really interesting. I was one time speaking at an event in Salt Lake City, Utah, at the Salt Palace. And as I was speaking there, I walked up the street and ran into an antique bookstore. And I found a book that talked about where that goal-setting formula that becomes so popular even comes from. And it's actually assembly line manufacturing. So in other words, if you want this amount of units at the do this, 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 get to that. The problem with that is that we're human beings, not human doing. And it's really tough if you live your life like an assembly line. It's not inspiring, and to become proficient in any specific task on that assembly line, it's going to take a lot of effort and time. In fact, Malcolm Gladwell says to become an expert in a given thing takes 10,000 hours. So it's a wonder that when you're trying to become expert at one little thing to get to your goal, and suddenly you die with you.
Lost you there again. Hello? Do I have you there, Doug?
You got me back?
There, now I do, yes.
Okay.
Sorry, you just
sorry,
keep
I'm
going
sure
in and out there.
Yeah, sorry about that. So the way that top achievers do things is what is called the law of probability. And the law of probability is very, very simple. Let me maybe explain it this way. Imagine if you were at a football field. Football field is about 100 yards long. And you're standing at one end, and at the other end, there is a target that you're trying to hit with a dart, right? Now, for most people, the chances of throwing that dart 100 yards and hitting a bullseye are extremely, extremely slim. In fact, let's call it impossible. But if they take a step forward, what happens to their chances? Their chances increase. And if they take another step forward, their chances increase again. This is the way top achievers get to their goals. They're not, again, worried about perfection. They're not making a list of, you know, to-dos. They're finding ways to increase the probability that what they're looking to do will happen. And in fact, Aristotle said it this way, that which is probable is most likely to occur. And so what we want to do to increase our probability is find ways to move closer to the goals. Now, I've discovered that there's really four elements to it. The first one is the people that we surround ourselves with. There are certain people that can open doors, that can open opportunities, certain people that we can learn from, that we can mentor with, people that we can imitate, that if we want to have the same results as them, we can do what they do. That's the first step. So if you want to get closer to your goal, start surrounding yourself with people that are already there or on the way there. The second way is by increasing our knowledge. What we learn, we've probably heard this before, but what we learn affects what we are able to earn.
When we know more, we receive more. We want to expand who we are so we can expand who we have, what we have in our lives. And so that knowledge, it's imperative that we start seeking out knowledge. In fact, I always say you can tell how committed a person is to what they really want as a goal by how much they're willing to learn about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the final two, the next one is what we call geography, right? There's some things you're going to have to shift geography. For example, if you want to become a movie star and you're in the middle of, you know, Downing, Montana, it's not really going to be a massive opportunity there for you to become a movie star. You might have to move to Los Angeles. So there's a few things that will require us to get up off the couch and go participate in geographically. And, you know, our probability increases when we're in the right spot, right? You've heard it that, you know, people feel like they're lucky all the time. Well, it's because they're always putting themselves in the probable location for luck to occur, right? Now, the final aspect of this law of probability is not really a location, a person, or a bit of knowledge. It's actually frequency. How often are you doing it? You see, it doesn't make sense to expect miracles to happen after the first person you meet or learning one thing or going to one event. It actually is a matter of doing that frequently. And the more often that you do it, the more often the opportunity will most likely move towards you. And by the way, just one other point on this geography, it just came to my mind. One of my mentors said it this way, and I thought it was so fun. And it's true. I found it really, really true. He said, you'll never do a $1 million deal at a $10 breakfast. So just remember that there are certain places you're going to have to level up. You might have to go to places that you've never experienced before. And I always find it interesting to notice people who say, yeah, they really want to build their business to a high level, yet they're not really willing to step to new places that they've never been before. They just keep repeating the same old. And how's that saying go? If you always do what you've always done, you're always going to get what you always got. And so I believe the fastest way to get to what you want, like I said again, is meet better people, learn more stuff, and get to the right geographical location and do that every possible moment you can. In fact, it's funny, when I was chatting with Jack Canfield, who did Chicken Soup for the Soul, and Mark Victor Hansen, his partner, together, they were both in my first movie, actually, The Opus, but as I've gotten to know them, one of the things that Jack revealed to me specifically about how they took Chicken Soup for the Soul to be one of the all-time best-selling book series on the planet, he says, we just set a goal that every single day we're going to do a minimum of five things that would take us closer to that goal, right? They increased the probability, but they did it steadily. Every day, it was a minimum of five things. Well, if you take the average Joe off the street and say, what did you do today to get closer to your goals? Chances are he can't even tell you what those goals are, let alone what he did, right? So we need to really get behind what we want. You can always tell how much a person really believes their own worth, even, by how much they're willing to contribute to their own betterment.
Yeah, I agree. Who would you say is the person who would most benefit from reading the book?
Wow, that's a great question. Obviously, I think as we've taught Personal Power Mastery in a live event, I've seen some amazing things happen for all kinds of different people. I've seen people who, first of all, if we start from, you know, going around that circle again, people who've had challenges with self-confidence, self-worth, belief in themselves. I've seen those kind of people ignite and explode. I've seen people who've been searching to, you know, find their spiritual path, people who are trying to bring their life into harmony with the ethics and things that they believe, but maybe not dialing into those habits in the way that they should, explode. I've seen people who've been looking to improve their health, whether it's to lose weight or quit smoking or to become more physically inclined. I've seen those people explode. I've seen actually a lot of relationships rescued, and also, funny enough, people who've had relationship challenges. In fact, I can remember one such lady who even lost a husband in Iraq, and she was able to use our program to actually become a massive support for others who'd been through the same circumstances and situations. And then lastly, it's inevitable that your abundance will grow. As you and your life expand, your results and your outcomes will expand. In fact, there's a really great book called The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace D. Wattles. Most people recognize this book, which was written in 1910, to be the resource that started the movie The Secret. And in that book, Wallace D. Wattles said, whatever may be said in praise of poverty, the fact remains that a person is not truly successful until they are rich. And I mean that in all senses of the word, rich in abundance, rich in time, money, opportunity, everything. And I believe that that's what Personal Power Mastery does. It's the key to become rich in all areas of your life. So whether you're
you know, a person just looking to build better family relationships, or like I said, better connection to self, or maybe you're a person working at a job in a corporate world that you're looking to have better outcomes there, or maybe you're even somebody who's an entrepreneur starting a brand new business. These are all tools that will help you explode success in every one of the areas of your life. Because the truth of the matter is success means, you know, an explosion of really balance, right? So how can you be abundant in all areas? All areas.
Yeah, that's great. Now, this is a book, and you also have live events. So obviously, besides being a book and a live event, what are the different what would people get differently from each experience?
Sure. Well, that's a great question. Well, I think that the cool thing about the book is it's obviously something where you can pause and you can work on specific principles or ideas that you feel you need at any given time. You can pace yourself, and I've met people that have already, you know, read the book and read it multiple times, and in fact have spent, you know, in their book study clubs or what have you, they've spent time masterminding around each of the chapters. In fact, there's one that I spoke with earlier this morning that they've spent the last 30 days working on some of the principles that we teach around the idea of gratitude, for example. So the book allows you to do things a little differently. And obviously in the book, there's questions and there's exercises that you can do, and those will really help you. At the live event, it's very different. And oftentimes, I love to say, that it's even different for me each time. And it really depends a lot on who's in the audience and what topics we decide to talk about and where we choose to spend our time. And although it's a three-day event, we've had some circumstances where, you know, we have spent a lot of time specifically on one subject within the book. So I guess what I'm saying is that it's very customized when you meet us in person, depending on who's in the audience and how we can serve you. And I've seen some people who've come to the mix and they've had, you know, for example, one group that we just did, they were all a bunch of entrepreneurs. And so they were looking at how do I build the habits and patterns of success into my daily life so that I can actually achieve greater success and balance in my business life. And so that became a big topic that we pretty much spent almost the entire time. Funny enough, I did one about a year ago where it was an event that was sponsored by a group that brought in a large group of single mothers, and there were a handful of you know, those that were even widows and things in the room, and all of these guys you know, wanted to talk a little bit more about how to build balance as a single parent or someone in a single situation. So it was very exciting to kind of see how these principles are universal, and they really do apply to everyone in every situation. And naturally, I mean, we've also had a very mixed group too, where we have been able to spend time developing things on all of the aspects of the program. But it's been fun for those who participated because they've seen how these principles can apply in so many different areas, depending on, again, who they're, you know, some of the activities that we do, our partner activities, but they're, you know, and maybe that's one thing I should share that I didn't share, is that this isn't just a seminar where I stand in front of the room and tell you guys what to do with your life. This is actually a very specific, even set of exercises that you'll do that will expand the understanding of these principles so that they will become part of the fabric of who you are, not just good ideas that you read about. They now actually become things that are really tied to you as a person, and they become that deep for you, or you own them that much. Suddenly they become things that begin to change your life. It's not just theory anymore, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, and that was one of the things that I liked about your book. At the end of chapters, you had questions for people to consider, you know, and those questions really take the topic and apply it to your own personal life, which I think is the best part of learning is application.
Absolutely. Yeah, I believe that too. And that was the same thing even as I was interviewing the world's top achievers. I wasn't just there for a conversation, right? Like anybody can have a conversation. I want to know, how do you apply this stuff, right? Like, how did you do it so I can do it? That's really, you know, the whole answer that I was looking for. I wasn't, you know, I enjoyed the stories that they shared, and I enjoyed the challenges that they experienced, but I actually was really there for the information on how I could do it too. That's the big difference.
Exactly. Well, a final question. Is there anything that you would like to leave the listeners with about personal power mastery that maybe we didn't cover that you feel is, you know, really important for them to know?
Well, I think one of the big things after having taught this now for several years, the one thing that always astonishes me is how close people actually are to their goals than they really realize. They are closer than they ever thought possible, and it doesn't take much tweaking to change a life. In fact, it's kind of, if you think about it as a mathematical equation, 1 + 1 = 2, right? But if you want a 3, all you got to do is change one of the elements in the entire equation, and you can get to a 3. And I think that most people think it's much harder to create either wealth or good relationships or, you know, whatever it is that you want. They think it's harder, and so they make it harder, and it doesn't have to be hard. So that's the first thing. The second is, and this isn't even one of my quotes. This is from one of my friends. His name's Alex Mendozian. And Alex actually said, "You're not as good as you think you are. You're better." And I really like that idea because I think, again, most of us, in addition to selling ourselves short of our goals, we also sell ourselves short on who we really are. And the truth of the matter is we are not here to fail, and we're not here to doubt or to live with fear. I believe that the universe and our creator put us here to succeed and to succeed with abundance and greatness, and that's why we are all entitled to have great ideas and brilliant possibilities. And the real difference between those that succeed and those that don't, there's really two things. The first is that the first thing is you got to be willing to learn. And if you can learn to do something that others have done, I mean, you're no different than any other human on the planet. You can learn this and you can gain those skills. But the second part is the one that really holds everybody back, and that's willingness. Most people are not willing. They're lazy, or they're not willing to put in the work, or they don't believe that they're worthy, or one thing or another. I'm going to tell you, you turn up the willingness and the information will come, but the willingness must come from you. So you need to make your success personal.
That's great. Yeah, this I really want to thank you for your time today. I mean, I think that just the information that you gave has gotten people, will empower people, you know, and hopefully they've learned something and will achieve, you know. So I really want to thank you for your time today, Doug.
Thank you. It's been awesome to be with you. I appreciate you having me.
It's my pleasure. Again today, everyone, my special guest has been Douglas Vermeeren. We've been talking about his new book, Personal Power Mastery, the Ultimate Manual for Honing Your Personal, Business, and Financial Success Proficiencies While Eradicating Your Limitations. Again, you can find out more by visiting Doug's website, which is www.douglasvermeeren.com, and that's Douglas and then Vermeeren.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, and until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.